Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're an hour or two of our show. I have resolved some of my technical problems down here in San Antonio, at least for the next hour or so. And hopefully in the next day or two, I will get that completely cleared up for next week's show. But we're going to have Anne Singleton on here in a few minutes from London, England. She is a former member of the Mujahideen-e Khalq organization that we discussed with Dr. Paul Sheldon Foote last week. And Anne is the author of Saddam's Private Army. This is an amazing person, by the way, both she and her Persian husband. They both have incredible stories to tell. I hope sometime to have her husband on the show to explain to us some of the things that he has been through in regard to his life and his past involvement with the MEK. But Anne should be hooking up with us shortly from her house. I understand that from Ken White's conversation with her on her cell phone, she was driving back to her home, and we will be reconnected with her in just a few minutes. Talking about all kinds of things this morning, this disastrous double suicide bombing in Baghdad. We've been observing the ongoing quagmire for the United States in Afghanistan, with reference both to General McChrystal's surprise visit to the NATO ministers' meeting to lobby for escalation, as well as Nat Hinthoff's very fine piece in the New York Times this past Friday, showing that if McChrystal's proposals are approved, folks, by President Obama, we're going to be spending $100 billion a year just in Afghanistan alone. Nat Hinthoff reminds us this morning that Mr. Obama is every bit as bad as Bush and Cheney on the Patriot Act. We could underscore that as well for his policy in Afghanistan. We looked at Mike Adams' piece reposted at InfoWars on swine flu. What is the nature of Mr. Obama's commitment to declaring a so-called pandemic that was a national emergency? Mike Adams, as we underscored this morning when we were looking at Mike's essay, indicates that there's a whole other agenda behind this swine flu paranoia that involves setting the stage for draconian new federal interventionary powers in every area of our lives. That would seem to dovetail, of course, with what we are doing internationally. Folks, we don't have much time before Ann joins us, but I wanted to get back to this whole business of David Ray Griffin this morning and this essay that is reposted in globaloutlook.ca, which you can still buy on the newsstand. This is a marvelous edition. This is the annual 2009 edition, issue number 13. It's entitled Prescription for a World in Crisis. Griffin has a lot of things to say about 9/11. A lot of very detailed things to say that many of you folks are aware of from having read his pieces and having listened to this radio network and reading the American Free Press and so forth and so on. But the fascinating thing to me is that in this essay entitled 9/11 and America's Blind Nationalist Faith, David Ray Griffin, who is also a theologian, goes into the deeper theological implications of a faith that is rooted more in blind nationalism than it truly is in Christianity. Griffin, in turn, indicates that he's drawing in his essay from ideas unpublished at this time by Christian theologian John Cobb. And if we have time when we come back, I want to take a look at this before Ann Singleton joins us. This is Mark Dankoff, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Attention, an important product from hempusa.org, microplant powder, will change your life by removing all types of positive toxins, such as heavy metals, parasites, bacteria, viruses, and fungus from the digestive tract and stomach wall so you can absorb nutrients. Microplant powder is 89% silica and packed with a negative charge that attracts positive toxins from the blood, organ, spine, and brain. This product has the ability to rebuild cartilage and bone, which allows synovial fluid to return to to the joints. Silica is a precursor to calcium, meaning the body turns silica into calcium and is great for the heart. There is no better time than now to have microplant powder on your shelf or in your storage shelter. And with an unlimited shelf life, you can store it anywhere. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. It's a great way to change your life. So call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org today.
The Berkeylite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeylite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeylite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeylite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on Cartavite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on Cartavite and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them. And what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast-killing effect. That yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect. And most of the other herbs in there, I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy is as close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut. It's working on the liver. It's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
For more information or to order your Cartavite, call 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or tincture. Our website is heartdrop.com.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Many of you listened to the show last week where Dr. Paul Sheldon Foote was on, coming to us from Cal State Fullerton, to discuss the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, or People's Holy Warriors Organization, the so-called Islamic Marxist group that was committing acts of terror in Iran, both in Pahlavi's Iran in the 1970s, as well as thereafter. Now, all kinds of things on this MEK organization, including Ed Blanche's essay in the June 2009 Middle East magazine, which is available on your newsstand. I think that this is an important enough story in terms of what's happening in Iran and in terms of this MEK group and its present relationship, positive relationship, unbelievably, with both the American Pentagon as well as with Israeli intelligence, that we would bring on someone who knows of this organization from the inside, and that particular person happens to be Anne Singleton of London, England. You can get to her website this morning, by the way, at www.iran-interlink.org. We will make sure that that website is posted in the show description, so later listeners will get an opportunity to take a look at what Anne has to say. Anne, how are things this morning in London, or this afternoon, your time?
Yeah, we're in afternoon time now. Hi, Mark. Thank you for inviting me on your program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you.
Well, I should have mentioned to the listeners that you are, among other things, the author of Saddam's Private Army. You and your husband, Masoud, and does Masoud pronounce his last name Kodabande?
Kodabande.
Kodabande.
Yeah.
We're both members of the MEK. I'll let you take it from there. How did you get involved with the Mujahideen-e-Khalq? What did you experience in that organization? Why did you leave?
Yeah, I have a very long history of involvement with the Mujahideen, perhaps not as long as Paul, but I have perhaps a closer relationship in that when I was a student, I just left school and was kind of not quite sure what I wanted to do with my life. I was between a hot college and university where I eventually studied English. And in that gap year, I met an Iranian student. This was 1977, so that was before the Iranian Revolution. And he was studying in England again, and we got together, and I kind of followed him through the revolution and got involved through being kind of part of his friendship circle. And he was somebody who was religious, and therefore he got involved with the Mujahideen rather than the communist groups like the Fedayeen, who were also quite active at the time of the revolution. So I went along to the meetings with him, and I was quite carried away with the, if I can say this, the romance of the time, because here were some powerful events taking place inside Iran, revolution, change, then the war happened, and I was being taken through it, almost given a kind of open window to what was happening in the country through my Iranian friends. And little by little, I got caught up in the Mujahideen's activities, and also I very much believed in their messages, because they were telling me that terrible human rights violations were taking place in Iran. There were people being executed summarily. People were being tortured in prisons. And I have no reference point whether to doubt them and whether to doubt whether it was their people being imprisoned. I guess many of them were at that early stage. So I felt very, very involved, and I felt quite, in a sense, responsible for acting on that knowledge which I had been given by these people. And that's really how I got caught up in the movement. I carried on my own life. I was a student. I studied English. When I finished my degree, I got jobs, various jobs. And I kind of had the Mujahideen always in my life, but always not, I wasn't fully involved. And then round about 1985, 86, 87, things changed in the Mujahideen, as Paul was explaining last week, if any of your listeners were kind of keeping up with events then. The Mujahideen kind of transmogrified into a cult, and Masoud Rajavi, who was originally the spokesperson at the time of the revolution, he declared himself as the sole leader of the organization, which was quite a coup, really, because it had until that point been led by a Politburo. And so he kind of took over control and leadership of the group. And, of course, he married his second-in-command's wife. They divorced, and Masoud and Mariam got married. There's all sorts of reasons why he explained that, but I was told basically they were having an affair and they had to kind of do something before they were outed. Let's not forget this is a Muslim organization, and that kind of activity would have been very much frowned upon inside the organization. So they got married, and they embarked on this kind of campaign where they got their members and the followers of the organization to submit to this total leadership. And that is where the cult element comes in, where they started putting into place the cult manipulations of the membership. And perhaps I'll go into that a bit later. But I was, as I say, I was on the periphery of this group, but I got more and more caught up. And as they made more and more demands of me, you know, from my time, for example, they'd ask me to go and help out in their bases, or they'd ask me to go for demonstrations. Then they would ask me for money. I was working. I had a very good job as a computer programmer. And so they kind of drew me in to the point where in 1998, where I'm 89 it was, sorry, I became a full-time activist with them. I gave up my job. I gave up my flat. And I threw everything aside and became a full-time activist. And that continued for 3 years. And I had some pretty extraordinary experiences in those 3 years. But eventually I found that the manipulations which they were imposing upon me were too difficult to cope with, and I walked out. Unfortunately, that was not the end of my involvement, because having walked out, I had nowhere to go, even though, strangely enough, I was in my own country at the time. I was in England. But I had no money, I had no job, I had nowhere to live. They'd already made sure that I'd cut off my relations with my family to the point where I felt that it would be an impossible humiliation to go back to my family and admit that I had been wrong. So that kept me away from their support. And so for the next 3 years, I was still within the sphere of influence of the Mujahideen, and they tried using their psychological manipulations to bring me back in, re-recruit me as a cult member, and reuse me as a cult member. Fortunately, I didn't succumb, and I, the more distance I got from the organization, the more I realized that they were not what they said they were. They were a pretty bad bunch of people. And so I eventually broke off all contact in 96. And at that point, fortunately, met my current husband, Masoud Khodabandi, and we kind of rescued each other, let's say. And from that point, started to recover from being with that organization.
Yes, and I think it's important for the listeners to understand that the MEK was not simply involved in acts of terror in Pahlavi's Iran in the 1970s. My father was one of the people that they missed, by the way. My dad was a logistical advisor to the Shah's Air Force at the time. He got back to this country safely. He was brought back here because there was a security alert out on him in regard to the fact that he was a potential target of the MEK. But there were a series of other American defense contractors and active duty military people who were killed at the hands of these people back in those years. But this goes well beyond that. I think Blanche's article in the Middle East magazine of June of 2009 discusses the ongoing war between the MEK and the present regime in Iran, and the fact that the MEK was very involved in working with Saddam Hussein against Iran during the 1980-1988 conflict between those two countries. It was the bloodiest conflict since the Second World War. And then, of course, the other thing that's quite fascinating to me in more recent times is that published news reports keep linking both the American Pentagon and the Israeli Mossad intelligence organization to the MEK, which seems to be a real turn of events from the 1970s. This is a very, very strange group of people we're talking about here.
They are very strange inside and outside. If you look back at the history of the Mujahideen, you'll see they have twisted and turned at every point to keep themselves alive, from, as you say, fighting the Pahlavi regime and then going ahead fighting against the Khomeini regime, as they called it.
We'll be back with Ann Singleton coming to us live from London, England, to discuss the Mujahideen e-Kalk when Mark Dankoff's America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on RBN. Stay tuned.
Utopia Silver believes it is your God-given and constitutionally protected right to make your own health care decisions however you choose. You have a right to truthful information about natural alternatives for healing and preventing illness. We don't sell drugs or tell you just to ask your doctor about expensive medications that only manage disease symptoms and have side effects that lead to still more medications in an endless spiral. Instead, we provide you with honest information and quality products so you don't have to depend on drugs. Utopia Silver is known for fighting for health freedom, but we also make and distribute some of the best colloidal silver, colloidal gold, and other top-notch supplements available anywhere. Take charge of your health and support our health freedom battles by visiting us at utopiasilver.com. That's UTOPIASILVER.com or call 888-213-4338. Again, 888-213-4338. This is Ben Taylor, and you will be appreciated in Utopia.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are hooked up today in the show's second hour and final hour with Anne Singleton of London, England. She is the author of Saddam's Private Army. She and her husband were members of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, the organization we were discussing last week with Dr. Paul Sheldon Foote of Cal State Fullerton. Anne Singleton has an incredible biography, by the way. If you begin learning more about her and about her husband, they have had some lives together in a maelstrom of events that most of us can only imagine in a Hollywood movie. If you want to get directly to Anne's site, you can do it at www.iran-interlink.org. That's www.iran-interlink.org, and I'll make sure that website gets posted in the archival show description for later listeners to actually get directly to Anne's postings and writings. And, of course, I'll make reference once again to my own essay on the Mujahideen-e-Khalq based upon Ed Blanche's story in the June 2009 magazine, The Middle East. It's entitled The Mujahideen-e-Khalq, The Peril of Paradox in American Middle East Policy. And as we talk about this this whole situation, you and your husband were apparently quite highly placed in the MEK at one time. Dr. Foote mentioned to me at one time your husband was actually involved in protecting Masood Rajavi That's about as high as it gets, I guess, in terms of the trust that at one time he had with the leadership of the MEK. How do you see this organization now in terms of what seems to be a working relationship with both the American Pentagon and with Israeli intelligence? Is this a paradox that most of their present membership accepts because of the authoritarian leadership structure, or what is it?
Yeah, this is quite an extraordinary paradox, as you say, that an organization which started out being anti-imperialist and whose favorite song was and probably still is War with America, is now being protected by elements in the American administration. I believe things are probably a bit different since January 1st, when the Iraqis took over protection of the group from the American army. But from 2003 right up to through 2008, this group, which is on the American list of terrorist entities, was being protected by American soldiers. And the recent RAND report, which came out, that was commissioned by the office of the new Secretary of Defense, this report let it be known that 14 American soldiers lost their lives, and I think around 60 were quite badly injured, in escorting members of the Mujahideen Khalq, the terrorist group, from their base in Camp Ashraf, the 60 kilometers into Baghdad. And the majority of these missions, which were taking place on a fairly regular basis, were basically shopping trips where the Mujahideen were stocking up on supplies. I think the report even mentions that one of the trips was to buy a business suit for one of the top members. Now, I don't know how Americans feel about that. I feel pretty angry that American soldiers have given their lives to protect what is essentially a terrorist organization.
Which was killing their own brethren in Pahlavi's Iran 30-plus years
ago. Yeah, I mean, the Mujahideen, there's no doubt whatsoever, they've killed thousands and thousands of Iranians, but also, I mean, I called my book Saddam's Private Army for a very specific reason. This is exactly how this group had functioned from about 1983 right through until 2003, when Saddam Hussein was taken out of power. The group acted as a private army for Saddam Hussein's regime. And that kind of brings things up to where we are now, because although people, I mean, yes, the Mujahideen were given protected person status wrongly, in my view, by then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. The group was seen, I guess, by some as being a kind of tool which they could use in negotiations with the Iranian government over the nuclear issue. They could kind of wave the Mujahideen at them and say, look, we've got your enemy over here, and we'll set them on you if you don't, give in to us. But that was never going to work, partly because the people in Camp Ashraf were disarmed by the American army, and also because their average age is around about 50. And it's not a fighting force anymore. It is a bunch of people who really need retirement.
Yes,
they need rescuing from there.
They're like me, the middle-aged guy at Gold's Gym yesterday walking on the treadmill. I know the feeling well.
We'll be back.
Yeah, those days of running a 9,500-yard dash are over. We'll be back with Ann Singleton, the author of Saddam's Private Army, when Mark Dankos America returns live from San Antonio on RBN. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual? When he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it?
I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program that helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get how to turn your child's attitude around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-656-4806. 1-800-656-4806. Call now. 1-800-656-4806.
The Berkeelite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeelite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeelite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeelite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and, in some instances, your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are hooked up today with Ann Singleton of London, England. You can find Ann's website at www.iran-interlink.org. She is the author of Saddam's Private Army. She and her husband were both members of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, MEK, sometimes known as the MKO. It was involved in acts of terror in Pahlavi's Iran well over 30 years ago and has in more recent times. But on the Iraqi side of the Iran-Iraq war, these folks have been involved in all kinds of acts of terror in recent years against the present regime in Iran and against the people of Iran, and have had a very interesting utilitarian relationship, we are now told in the international press, with both the American Pentagon as well as with the Israeli Mossad intelligence organization. And as we talk about the Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, last week I didn't find out about this until after Paul Sheldon Foote was on my show, that there was a terrible atrocity, a bomb blast or two in Balochistan province in Iran, that's in the southeast part of that country, for people not familiar with the geography, that resulted in the deaths of a number of men who were top leaders in the Revolutionary Guard in Iran. And this was something attributed to a group called Jundallah, which according to the press is a Sunni Islamic organization working out of Pakistan, sometimes crossing the border and doing things inside Iran, like what happened with these bomb blasts last week. Now, the significant thing to me about this story is that Dr. Foote mentioned to our listeners and to me 7 days ago, before I knew about this latest episode in Balochistan province, that this Jundallah group, in fact, from time to time has worked with the Mujahideen-e Khalq. Are we to suspect that, I mean, it's a terrible thought, but are we to suspect that American and Israeli and British intelligence could have been behind what happened in Balochistan province last week?
I think I would agree entirely with what Paul said last week, could follow the money. You know, these groups are funded from somewhere, and they're also supported logistically from somewhere. What I do know is that the Jundallah group down in the southeast borders of Iran, yes, have admitted publicly that they have had training and logistical support from the Mujahideen. That doesn't surprise me in the slightest. The Mujahideen has now become a totally mercenary group and quite prepared to do the dirty work for group, Mossad or the CIA or British intelligence, wherever you like to point the finger. You follow through, as I say, the finance to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia for many years funded the Mujahideen. I don't see why they would have stopped now. Mujahideen, I think, I predicted a few months back that they would no longer find a use for Western interests as an armed force themselves, because, as I say, they've been unarmed for the last 6 years, and they're a kind of aging bunch of people. They're quite decrepit in their internal structures, but they could be quite useful for training new terrorists, and I. Sort of predicted a while back in my website that they would be used to train and help other younger groups like Jundallah, like Pejak is a new kind of offshoot of the PKK, the Kurdish group in the north of Iraq. And they would support these groups as irritants against the Iranian government, performing terrorist acts and but generally kind of trying to cause disruption and basically a terrorist wave of attacks on the borders of Iran to destabilize the current regime there. And I don't think that, what I know about American politics, I have to say, you know, it could fit on the back of a postage stamp.
Yes. No. I suspect that's not true. You're being self-deprecating there.
Well, I do know that there are still people around who really kind of find the Mujahideen a very, very useful and fascinating bunch of people. And who wouldn't? You know, here we have a group of people who are prepared to do just about anything, and who don't get paid. I mean, you know, I was in the Mujahideen for a long time. I didn't get a penny. I gave them everything I had, you know. And so you have what amounts to a kind of free labor force prepared to give their lives, to kill people, to take part in suicide attacks, and they don't get paid. So who in the West wouldn't be happy to use them against Iran? But interestingly, that I see in the last 9-10 months, since the Iraqi government has taken over control of the group, that I think Western interests have kind of given up on this idea that the Mujahideen themselves will be of use against Iran, and they're using them now as a kind of spearhead in order to bring back the Saddamists into Iraq. Because, of course, the Saddamists were pro-Western, and, Saddam Hussein was a renegade leader, but at the end of the day, he was on the side of the West against Iran. Now, a lot of people are thinking that Iran is gaining too much influence in Iraq, and they would like to see these Saddamists come back, you know, and then take more positions in government and such like. But, of course, it's not possible to actually say that directly. You can't say, well, let's bring Saddam Hussein's regime back. But the Mujahideen are a kind of name which you can use, and they have a camp there, and that camp was used over the last 6 years to host the Sunni leaders and sort of persuade them to take up a more active role. And the Iraqi government has blamed a lot of the insurgency in the Diyali province, where the Mujahideen are, actually directly on the Mujahideen, that they are kind of like a front for these violent extremists who are still creating so much chaos in the country. So they have a new use, as far as I can see, and they won't go away. They even though I would say that the elections that took place in Iran in June kind of it sorted out who was who in the country. And I think the Mujahideen got pushed aside completely, and that most Iranians, because of the history of this group, because they sided with Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq war, and because they have killed so many people in the country, I think most Iranians, you know, the vast, vast majority, I would be surprised if anybody supported the Mujahideen inside Iran.
Yeah, it's probably good at this point to mention this Habilian Association organization that Dr. Fuda put me in contact with. These folks are based in Iran. They have for very good reasons, a very anti-MEK orientation. And I believe their international liaison director mentioned a figure of 16,000 deaths to me in terms of those Iranians who had died at the hands of the MEK in regard to various acts of terror within that country.
Sure. I mean, the Mujahideen like to present themselves as victims and say that they have been killed by the Iranian regime year after year. But, of course, they quite happily forget that they have been conducting terrorist acts in Iran for 30 years now. And if they hadn't been disarmed in 2003, then they would still be doing it. I have no doubt whatsoever that is what they're about. They only see the path to power through violence. They don't have any other means of gaining power. No, they come to Europe, they'd like to claim that they have become some kind of democratic, feminist, you know, sort of benign organization, which is opposed to the current regime in Iran. And they're jumping on that bandwagon of people who, of course, are very much struggling for freedoms and democracy in Iran. But the Mujahideen have never been democratic. They've never been feminist. I can tell you that because I've been in them, and I've suffered their democracy, which was simply obey orders, and that is how they are. And as I say, their raison d'etre, their very existence, is based on violence. That's what they do.
Well, you know, as I have read a little bit of the history of the MEK, and of course, you were involved in it at the highest level, so you're the expert here. But one thing that strikes me as I study a little bit more about the Mujahideen-e-Khalq from a variety of sources, especially you and Dr. Foote, there's a troublesome utilitarianism that emerges in terms of American foreign policy, it seems to me, in the Middle East as well as elsewhere, where an organization whose obvious involvement in terrorism is something that we're well aware of, since they were killing many of our own people a generation or two ago in Pahlavi, Iran, and yet knowing not only what they were doing then, but what they have done just in the last quarter of a century to Iran and in Iran is a very atrocious story. And yet clearly the American Pentagon seems to have no real objection to working with them, where they think that there's a mutual interest. Is there a certain moral perversity that you see in all of this?
Absolutely. I mean, You're talking about the last quarter of the century. I'm reminded, I mean, my story, just to say, is kind of interesting, I suppose, because I'm British and I was completely duped by these people and taken in, and I really believe that they were good guys. And many, many people still believe they're good guys. I suppose other people are a little bit more cynical, and they would say that they get their support because people get paid to support them. But there are many people who still have this idea that the Mujahideen are somehow a good force. And, you know, it's kind of like black and white, that the regime of Iran is bad and therefore the Mujahideen are good. But just speaking then, something just popped back into my memory, that after the 9/11 atrocity, the Mujahideen, and I've heard this from people who've left the organization since then, Masoud Rajavi gathered all his people together on that very same day. He kind of got everyone together to watch the films and say, look, you know, this is what's taking place right now. And he cheered, and they celebrated, and they stamped their feet, and they waved their hands, and down with America is what they said. And that's genuine feeling inside the organization. It's there. It's part of them. They are what they call anti-imperialists. They still have this vision of themselves as being some revolutionary, I don't know whether you'd call them communist or kind of liberation theology group, which allowed them to feel that to blow up two buildings and kill nearly 3,000 people was a good act. And in fact, Masoud Rajavi said, you know, that these are the fundamentalists. This is, Osama bin Laden is a fundamentalist. If that's what the fundamentalists can do, let them see what the radical Muslims can do, meaning himself and the Mujahideen. Now, a year later, this group is being schmoozed by the American administration, or the Pentagon, as you say, and given protected person status, which no longer exists, I have to stress. But for 6 years, you know, being kept in a camp and protected by American soldiers, the group didn't change just because they took their guns off them. And if you give their guns back to them, they'll still be the same group they were before, who celebrated 9/11. Where's the morality in that? I don't know.
Yes, absolutely. We have a caller for you, Ann, from Maryland. Mike from Maryland, you're on with Mark Dankoff. If we end up cutting to a commercial break, I'll still bring you back, Mike. Go ahead. Oh, he dropped off? Sorry about that. So sorry to Mike in Maryland. Maybe we'll catch up with him the next time he calls in. Ann, it's interesting, again, as I think about all of this, I'm reminded of this whole business of paradox. One of the things I said in my own essay on the MEK is that the paradox of this never ceases to amaze me and becomes incredibly confusing for those who have attempted to follow any of this in recent years and recent months. I say the ultimate paradoxes are these. First, Mr. Bush's Operation Iraqi Freedom has resulted in the installation of a central government in Baghdad, largely sympathetic to the IRI regime in Tehran, and with identical animosity to the MEK's presence within its borders. Second, while Ed Blanche notes that it, quote, was the MEK that disclosed the existence of Iran's nuclear program in August of 2002, stunning the U.S. intelligence and military establishments, unquote, he fails to note credible information provided by Barry O'Connell and IPF's Gareth Porter that the MEK's role in, quote, disclosing the existence of Iran's nuclear program, unquote, has been to serve as a clandestine conduit of information on the subject supplied by the Israeli intelligence community. Hello, Mossad, I say. Meet your new allies in the Islamic Marxist network worldwide. And what I think it's obvious what Israel's interest in this type of relationship would be. What does the MEK derive in terms of a quid pro quo for being involved in this?
In one simple word, survival. They are at a point where they are grasping at straws. They, as I say, have turned into a completely mercenary group and will sell themselves to anybody in order to survive. That is how bad things are for them. Now, yes, I will state categorically that that information which the Mujahideen so-called exposed came from Mossad. It came from Israeli intelligence. I know this because the person who actually disclosed it in America has left the organization and has actually divulged that that's where they got the information from.
Let's pick it up right there when we come back. We'll be in the final minutes of our interview with Ann Singleton. When we come back, she's coming to us, of course, live from London, England. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Attention RBN listeners, the Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze-Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
Is credit card debt stressing you out? If you're serious about regaining control of your finances, Big Solutions, the country's leading nonprofit debt management and consumer credit counseling service, can get you back on track. Whether you're behind with your payments or just frustrated with balances that never seem to go down, BSI can help you. Creditors have given Big Solutions very special repayment arrangements to help you get out of debt. These include lowering interest rates by 50% or more, bringing past due accounts current, and stopping harassing collections calls. BSI's team of certified financial counselors can consolidate all your credit card bills into one low monthly payment.
I chose BSI because they never asked for high fees I couldn't afford, and my creditors told me that Big Solutions had a great reputation.
Call the debt specialist at Big Solutions right now at 1-800-497-7722 to receive more information. BSI works with your lenders, but more importantly, Big Solutions works for you. Take control of your finances. Call 1-800-497-7722.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're in the last couple of minutes of our broadcast this morning with Ann Singleton, coming to us live from London, England, talking about the Mujahideen Khalq. Again, Ann's website is www.iran-interlink.org. For those of you interested in Iran and in things Iranian as it relates to international foreign policy, espionage, intrigue, terrorism, tragedy, human rights, that entire listing and panoply of things that tend to be associated with that part of the world, this website, iran-interlink.org, is for you on an ongoing basis. And obviously you continue to be involved very heavily in activism as it relates to the MEK, although from a different perspective than was the case before. Do you still travel to Iran?
I travel to Iran, yes. I visit my mother-in-law there. Very, very interesting country. I would recommend a visit to anybody because it's so, so very different from the kind of images that we get.
Yes.
In the West. Yes, it's full of problems and the people do struggle there, but it's very different from the kind of black and bleak place that you're presented with. It's a vibrant and very, very interesting country, very good people.
I had talked to Dr. Foote a little bit on the email that eventually I might try to go back over there again for a visit, and he encouraged me in that regard. I think that that's an important thing to major on as we get close to the end of the hour here, is that the absolute demonization of the Iranian people, courtesy of the Western news media, has provided a completely false composite of who these folks are, in my view. I know what I experienced when I was there as a young person visiting my parents in the 1970s over a period of summers, and the Iranian expatriates that I've known in this country as well have always treated me with the greatest courtesy and the greatest sense of decency. And I guess that that is what troubles me so much about all this irresponsible talk about a preemptive military attack on that country. Certainly, I have my own issues with the present regime in Iran, as many people do. But the notion that we should be sanctioning an American-Israeli preemptive military attack on these people, with all the thousands of innocent people that would be subsequently killed, is simply horrendous to me.
Sure, you know, one of the first things that struck me when I went to Iran for the first time after I got married, it was way back in 1998. And I was full of trepidation, of course, because here I was, of somebody who'd been fighting this country, you know, with the Mujahideen for all these years. And I just couldn't have been more wrong. And what struck me about the people there is that they're not waiting to be rescued. They're doing it themselves. They are strong and capable people, and they've got their own internal opposition, and they are doing it for themselves. And the idea that, you know, we can go in there and bomb them and sanction them and kind of somehow rescue them is just, it's outrageous, really. You know, they are perfectly capable of changing their own government in the way that suits them and the way that will suit their country.
Yes, and I think it's worth noting that many of the founding fathers of the United States recognized that this type of a messianic foreign policy abroad would not only lead to tragedy abroad perpetrated in the name of the American people, it would also lead to a more despotic American government at home. And, of course, I'm editorializing by saying that I believe that that's entirely what's in the process of happening. It's a great tragedy. Let's hope that God and a lot of well-meaning human effort can turn all of this around. I'd like to thank Ann Singleton for being on the show today from London, England, talking about the Mujahideen Khalq. Again, her website is www.iran-interlink.org. I'll be back on next week, hopefully, with an interesting guest for you, both this coming week as well as the week that follows. And I want to stay in ongoing contact with both Ann and with Paul Foote. God bless you. See you next week.
With recent